Welcome to Hype, episode 133. My name is Selena. I'm joined by Pam this week to talk about the latest entertainment news stories. How are you doing, Pam?
I'm doing great. I missed the show. I missed you guys last week.
I know. You missed a whole week.
I know. It's so weird. Like, you guys don't even know how... Well, maybe you do. Like,
Pam when we take a break.
It is really strange for me not to be here, but that's probably how our listeners feel when we miss a week or skip a week or have to push the show back and stuff, which has not been happening lately, but I know we've had to do that before, so.
We've been really good at keeping our schedule. This week, we're recording a little bit earlier, so there's not like a huge amount of news stories to talk about because it's actually only been like half a week since we recorded last, but we wanted to make sure we got this episode in. But we do still have some interesting news stories. We have a big discussion about Doctor Who, which actually kind of ties into our announcements about our Patreon that we're launching, and that discussion will be separate from everything else in the episode, but you will be able to hear it. We'll explain more as we get further into the episode. We also have our How We Hype, and we have TV Show of the Week listener feedback as always, and lots of fun stuff to get into. Before we do, we just want to remind you of the contact information if you want to react to anything we talked about or send in any recommendations. You can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @HypeableHype. You can find us on Tumblr @hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com, in the podcast section. Leave your comment on episode 133 and we will find it for next week. We also still welcome your reflections on The 100 Season 3 because we haven't recorded that episode yet. Merrim and Pam are in the midst of the season. I think Merrima was literally on episode 7 last time we talked. I haven't heard from her since, so that should be interesting. And I don't know how far you are now, Pam.
I am on episode 6 still.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So just one behind.
I'm just one behind, but I did have to... We have this little like group chat that we do in between shows and stuff like that to plan, and I had to, you know, sound the alarm and let Merrima know that she was ahead so she wouldn't spoil anything.
Yeah.
She always starts off behind me and then she watches like a million episodes in a day and then all of a sudden she's ahead of me. It's crazy.
Yeah. But we should expect to have that podcast done within the next week. The 100 already premiered on the CW in season 4 and we'll get a little bit more into that later in the episode, though obviously not really, because, you know, I don't want to spoil anyone, but should be fun. But the first thing we're going to do, as always, is How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. What have you been doing, Pam?
Oh, I've been watching a bunch of movies. The Oscars are coming up. I like to stay informed in terms of, like, at least the Best Picture nominees. And this year there are 9, and I thought that I had, like, a million movies to watch before the awards take place at the end of this month. It turns out I'm not as behind as I thought, so that's a first, actually. I think I only had 3 I hadn't watched yet, so that was pretty good. And I watched 2 of them this week. I watched Manchester by the Sea, and I watched Moonlight. They're both so good. They're so heavy, but they're so good. And the acting is just phenomenal. Moonlight specifically is such an important film. And I cannot recommend it enough. Like, both of them are very, very good, but Moonlight just stands out among the rest. And it just, the subject matter it deals with in terms of the Black identity and also, like, the idea of otherness within the Black identity is so powerful and so well done. And the acting is just so great. And it's such a beautiful film. I cannot recommend it enough. Manchester by the Sea is really good, too. It's also equally devastatingly beautiful in terms of the story. So if you're looking for some good dramas, I recommend both of those. I was very, very impressed by both films.
That's good to hear. So based on the ones you've seen so far, would you say that Moonlight stands out to you the most as one that maybe objectively deserves to win, or...
That is a really good question. I'm just going to pull up really quickly the list of Best Picture nominations. There's so many this year that I kind of have to take a look at what's going down. I have not seen Fences yet. but that's like the last one I need to see. So I hesitate to make a choice based on that. For best picture, I think Moonlight is up there among my favorites. I think Moonlight and La La Land were my favorites for best picture. Manchester by the Sea. It's so funny because I really think that the acting might be more of a contender in Manchester by the Sea instead of like the overall best picture. But then it's really hard because I also like, in terms of like best actor, I will always be rooting for Dev Patel because I've been such a huge fan of his since Skins. Yeah, I mean, but you know, all of these, like, they all kind of end up getting like intermingled supporting at best, all that stuff. But it's really tough. But I think that out of just like the straight up dramas I've seen, probably Moonlight has been my favorite.
That's good to know. I'm still waiting for most of them to come out here, so I have still only seen three of them.
What have you seen?
Well, I've seen Hidden Figures, which is my favorite, but the other two that I've seen are Hacksaw Ridge and Arrival. So, you know, I've still got the best to come, I think. But I mean, I do love Hidden Figures. I'm so happy it was nominated at all. So
it's really good too. It's so hard. I really loved that as well in a different way. It's a lot of all of these films I have enjoyed in a different way. And I think that's why it's so hard to sit here and say, this is the front runner. As somebody that doesn't vote, doesn't know like too much about how. I don't think I've ever.
Stuff at play.
Yeah, exactly. It just depends on how the Academy is feeling that year. It depends on what kind of captures their hearts and their imaginations,
and I mean,
which is
Land
why
is gonna win anyway. Like, it's like not even interesting.
You never know, though.
I think we. I would be extremely surprised if La La Land didn't win, just based on how it swept the awards and how it just kind of speaks to people's like nostalgia and it's magical and it's you know, I think having not seen any of them, a film like Moonlight winning would be amazing and important, but I think La La Land sort of seems to me like the one that has swept the vastest majority of people away, and the escapism it offers is probably something that they're gonna, you know, it's like God, I had this conversation with Merriman. I already forgot the title of the movie, the Artist, a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's funny, though, that you mentioned that about La La Land, because while I totally understand the idea of, like, escapism, it is ridiculously whimsical. I will say that if you kind of strip that away and think about it as a kind of a portrait of a, like, not necessarily just of the actors, but, like, of a city, it really shines a harsh light on this idea that Los Angeles and Hollywood, like, they're really cold cities, and they, if you let them, they'll just take everything away from you. And just having lived out there for 2 years and not necessarily pursuing acting but trying to break into the entertainment industry in a different way, I think that some of the concepts in La La Land were like just spine tingling to me, because it's just so easy to let that city chip away at you until you've given everything you've got and you've got nothing left to give. And it's hard to find the motivation to keep going in a place like that, which is so funny because in contrast, I think that New York does a better job of motivating people that, like, equally hard to make it. But there's the air of motivation is always a light, you know, among everybody that lives there. It's so weird. And it's like, it's such like an abstract idea. But I think I walked away from La La Land being impressed by it for a completely different reason than most people. And it definitely has to do more with just kind of like the darker undertones of the idea. So I'll be interested to hear what you think when you watch
it. Definitely. I'm excited to watch it. But you know what stunning piece of cinematic history I did bear witness to this week was... Because, you know, I try to stay current, too, with movies based on what's available to me. So I took my brother to see the action masterpiece movie XXX Return of Xander Cage with Vin Diesel.
And Nina Dobrev.
And Nina Dobrev, who totally stole that movie. And you know what? I really liked this movie. I thought it was amazing. I hadn't seen any of the other ones. I didn't know what was going on. I thought I took my brothers to see it because Neymar, the football player, is in it and he loves him. And when he came on screen, because he was in the very first scene, And my brother, like, his eyes, like, lit up, and he was like, he's so beautiful. And I was like, oh, so cute. But then, like, he appeared to die, and then my brother was, like, mad for the whole movie until, like, the final reveal. Sorry, spoilers. But you know what? This movie, though, I will say, like, for an action flick, which I really enjoy action films, I think they're, like, a wonderful escape. It was so well done. The stunts were fantastic, like, there's a sequence towards the beginning of the movie where he is on a skateboard and he goes like all the way down a mountain. And that was thrilling. And I'm just so glad I didn't see it in 3D because I would have thrown up. But as I watched it, it was really, really good. The theme of the movie, it's interesting because I feel like we talk so much about how like we need diverse movies that sort of showcase like outsider rebel type sort of taking the power from established government. And what sort of struck me as I watched this movie is you know, like Rogue One is getting like huge hit. Everyone's like, it's so important, it's whatever. I feel like this movie kind of did it better. Like not that you can't have both, but it's just this is like written off as a silly action film. And yes, there was like objectification of both genders and there was a lot of silliness and stuff. But just in terms of its message of rising up and fighting and fighting back, and it was like extremely good, and I was like really felt really motivated by that like silly action movie, and I just felt so entertained, and I'm like genuinely, I just really genuinely liked it. So
you know, I honestly feel it's interesting you point this out because I really do feel like Vin Diesel takes that to heart a lot. Like a lot of his films kind of deal with this idea of creating a family of people that you have picked, because if you look at the Fast and Furious franchise as well, it is a very diverse group of people from different walks of life coming together, becoming a family, and sticking it to the man. And when you take into consideration how much of a hand Vin Diesel has in those movies continuing on despite Paul Walker's passing for all of these years, like it's just a testament to kind of what he values. And I don't know much about the Xander Cage franchise, but I do know that he was in the first one. They made a few in the middle that he did not star in, and he had a huge hand in like bringing this one to life because he signed on to come back and reprise his role. So I'm sure that he,
if you're listening,
yeah, good on you, Vin Diesel.
Yeah, you have a fan.
And I hear that he's the nicest guy. And that's, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, that's all it takes for me to head out and support something. So maybe I'll go watch this too.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that I took my brother to see, it really wasn't like a thing of me saying, like, you need a guy to watch an action film. Like, I 100% would have gone myself if I'd known it would have been good. I just figured it was terrible. But my brother, like, that football player a whole lot, so I was like, oh well, I'll go anyway. And then I was just so pleasantly surprised. And we need more movies like that sort of quietly do what I feel like other movies get a lot of credit for. So it's just nice to recognize that more films are doing it and they don't really get recognized for it. Anyway, moving on, I did watch another one that kind of ties into our first news story, so I'll just bring it up really quickly. And it was actually, I had my 5-year-old cousin on a visit, and she had never seen Beauty and the Beast, the original movie. And I was like a little bit unsure whether I should show it to her because I remember being so terrified of Beauty and the Beast when I was a kid. But nowadays, I feel like children watch much scarier stuff than we were exposed to. Like Frozen is pretty terrifying, and she watched that when she was like 3. So I was like, you should be all right with Beauty and the Beast. I think she was just slightly traumatized, so that was okay. And it's been a while since I've watched the original cartoon, and I just thought it was fitting because it's coming back on the big screen live action. So kind of going back and refreshing my memory about the cartoon, and it was really good. Like, it's really sort of just a joy to re-experience that and remembering the power of Belle, as it were. Like, she's really fierce. Like, she's really a great female character for the time when the film was made. And the animation is so terrible. Like, you really notice that now because it's gotten so much better. And some of the I couldn't look away from some of the background animation. Like, when the characters weren't in focus, their eyes were like blobbed into one big eye, and so like, it was really, really bad. But I just really loved it, and I just really sort of re-experienced the magic, which I loved. And my cousin was so adorable. She identified with the beast. Like, I was kind of like, look at all the books and look at Belle.
That's
isn't she
really
cool?
Deep.
And she was just like, yeah. Oh, if I was the beast, I would do one. Like, and I was like, whoa.
Wow.
And she was like, got really deep into like analysis. And she was like the scene when Belle goes to back to her father and leaves the beast. And she was like, well, why doesn't he just go with her? I don't get it. That's what I would do. And I was like, you are a genius.
So she's giving you hope for the new generation.
She is. But anyway, I mean, moving on to news, this kind of ties into the first story. So
yeah, it's perfect. And now that you've seen the original 90s animated version of Beauty and the Beast, you can kind of look at the final Beauty and the Beast live action trailer we're going to get before this hits theaters with a very nice lens, because you'll be able to make all those correlations. We did get the final trailer for this movie earlier this week, and it is definitely going to make you feel nostalgic if you're a huge fan of the animated film. There's a lot of like little tiny throwbacks in there. For me, I think that Gaston steals the show. He's such a outlandish character that I'm just kind of excited to see what Luke Evans does with it. It's like perfect casting. It's great. And you know, we get a couple of scenes that we have gotten in the teasers before. There's a couple of extended peaks. We see, like, you know, Belle getting saved by the beast after she's almost attacked by wolves, things like that. And we also get a tiny little taste of Ariana Grande and John Legend's cover of the title track, which is exciting if you're looking forward to the soundtrack. So what did you think of this trailer? I know a lot of people were a little upset about how much it showed, but I don't think it really bothered me very much, because I'm more excited to see what they do different.
I mean, exactly. Like, you're talking about an adaptation of a film we've already seen. Like, if they spoiled too many of the surprises, I would have been more upset. But, like, literally what they show is I've just seen the other movie, and, like, it's not... It's okay. Like, I don't know what they expected. Like, I will say, this was definitely by far my favorite trailer, and probably the one that has me most excited about the reboot, because I'm still like, even after all the Jungle Book hype, like, I'm still a little bit like, it's hard for me to get too excited about a remade version of a story that I already know. I don't know, it's just I don't know, I'm just old, I guess. But I love this trailer. I thought it gave me a lot of feelings. I love getting sort of more insight into the village. You know, it seems obviously a lot of things are very relevant now that maybe would not have been relevant before the election and stuff, and just, you know, the bigoted people in the village and Gaston and how Belle deals with it. I thought all that was super interesting, and any doubt that I had about Ariana Grande is like gone now completely. Like, I know she's an amazing singer. I had that thing like, oh, Ariana Grande, it's gonna be too Disney. I don't know, it is Disney. I don't even know what I was thinking, but it sounded so good, the song.
Yeah, I honestly think that people... Ariana Grande is... You can't deny that she's, like, a powerhouse vocalist. She's incredibly talented. But I think that a lot of people write her off because of, like, the idea of who she is in the public.
I mean, I do that. I'm so guilty of doing that, and I don't want to.
I know, and I'm not blaming you for it, because I think a lot of people do that, and it just makes me so sad. But her albums are really good, and she also is... she's very influenced by the classics. So just because of that, and just, you know, having like spent some time listening to like her whole repertoire of like the two albums she's put out, making her sound like such an old artist. But I just, like, after I've spent some time with her music, I'm always interested to see what else she does. And you can tell she's like genuinely a huge fan of Disney and Beauty and the Beast and stuff like that. So that automatically makes me more excited for anybody. Like, if anybody that's a big fan of anything gets a chance to like put like get into it like this, I'm just so excited on their behalf. So I was really but yeah, she pulled it off wonderfully. And it also kind of reminds me a little bit of the original in a strange way.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, because she's got such like a rich voice and John Legend's got such a clear voice, and that distinction is very similar to what Celine Dion and I think it was Peepo Benson did in the original track.
All right, so moving on, we have an interesting, cool news story here. It's very short, but basically we have our first look image at the full cast of Ocean's 8, which is the female spin-off of Ocean's 11. Cast is are all standing or sitting in a train, sort of all looking various variations of just cold, badass, just really exactly what you would expect and what you probably want from this film. So the characters or the actresses shown are Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, Rihanna, Mindy Kaling, Awkwafina, Helena Bonham Carter, and Hathaway and Sarah Paulson. I will say, first of all, that I love this picture and I love the idea of Ocean's 8. And I really wish that they hadn't put all the women of color in the back. You know, like it was like the first thing that stuck out to me after, like, oh, this looks so cool. I was like, ah, but that was unfortunate because it really also highlights like how like it is a diverse cast, but it's also, you know, five white women to three women of color. And I feel like they could have, this just highlights that it's the white women that are the leads. And obviously they, you know, Kate Blanchett and Hathaway and Sandra Bullock are all probably the, or Helena Bonham Carter. I don't know. I get it in a sense. I just feel like the, when you look at the image, it just, it's unfortunate that that is how the constellation ended up being, you know?
I think that I wish I had noticed that when I first saw this photo, I didn't until you brought it up. But also because I think that my eyes are automatically trained to go to the center and move outwards.
Yeah. So the first time I saw this, because she sticks out in
right,
red jacket,
and she's like the aesthetic I aspire to, just looking like she gives no F's on the subway, looking amazing. But yeah, I think that like when I first saw this, I my eyes went straight to the back because it's, you know, because of the angle, and then kind of like I worked my way up. But now that you mentioned that, that is kind of like, it's a very strange way to have organized all of these lovely ladies.
I feel like it just highlights, you know, the power dynamic of that picture is just super unfortunate. But it's not to say that I'm not excited about this movie and stuff. It's just really sad that it has to be like on these terms, I guess. But the movie, I mean, it's worth, I feel like it's just worth noting to say, look, we're aware of this. And that is, we wish they'd done it differently. The movie seems like it's going to be really good. They gave a short description of it along with the picture, which goes, in summer 2018, the tide will turn as Debbie Ocean, who's Sandra Bullock, attempts to pull off the heist of the century at New York City's star-studded annual Met Gala. Her first stop is to assemble the perfect crew. Lou, Nineball, Amita, Constance, Rose, Daphne, and Tammy. So that sounds great. I mean, it sounds like Ocean's 11, but with women.
And also the good thing is that this is just a still, so they still have room to still, you know, to wow us away with the official poster for the movie.
Absolutely.
So yeah. But you're right. It is
I'm
important
not
to just
it off
bring
because
it up.
Of an image.
Yeah, of course
yeah,
not.
It's just unfortunate.
I mean, you're
image.
Like the most excited. We all know this.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all the most excited, but you are definitely the most excited. All right. Well, moving on to a little bit more movie news here. Ben Affleck was set to direct the solo Batman film he was also going to star in. But this week, he and Warner Brothers released a joint statement saying that he was going to be stepping down as director. And this is kind of like bittersweet because Ben Affleck is really good at directing. But I think that his reasoning for why he decided to step down was actually really smart. And it shows his dedication and to the idea of telling this story, which I think is really good. So he said that there are certain characters who hold a special place in the hearts of millions. Performing this role demands focus, passion, and the very best performance I can give. It has become clear that I cannot do both jobs to the level they require. Together with the studio, I have decided to find a partner in a director who will collaborate with me on this massive film. So I think this is good because it's better than the final product being done and then everybody thinking he really should have gotten somebody else to step in. So it's a noble reason to step down.
I agree. I mean, I don't have a strong attachment to this. I like the idea that Ben Affleck was directing mainly because it meant that Zack Snyder wouldn't be directing. And I think, you know, when an actor acts and directs, it does pull your focus and it's a lot of work and he has a lot to do. So I think it's great as long as it doesn't end up becoming a Deadpool situation, you know, because he's so attached to this. and he's so attached to this character, and anyone they bring in to direct, it's going to be hard for him to sort of cede to that person. I mean, I don't know him personally. I just assume so.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that that's a valid idea, though, because you do think about that, especially when somebody's so attached. And that's the first thing I thought of when Deadpool announced that they had lost their director.
Miller, yeah. It's like, so, well, obviously, because Ryan Reynolds won't, like, any decision that he, a director, tries to make, it's Marvel all over again, you know? Any direct, like, decisions that divert too much from the master plan, they're like, no, we're going to make the decision because it's our thing. So it will be interesting. I mean, I think the general consensus is that this is a good thing, and people are sort of spitballing who should direct, and I don't have any particular ideas myself. I don't know if you do, but we'll keep an eye on this for sure.
No, it's hard. It's hard with superhero movies specifically, because I feel like your mind has a tendency to typecast what director should direct it. But we've also seen brilliant directors come from all walks of life, come in and totally crush it. So for sure. I don't even try to dream cast directors for any superhero entities anymore.
Ava DuVernay, she
should just direct everything. It's true.
Yeah. So moving on to another franchise, this is just a cute little story. The Star Wars anthology film about Han Solo has begun filming, and Chris Miller, who is one half of the directing duo who also brought us the Lego movie, has marked the start of production with a slate that is just so brilliant that it's really hilarious. Like, first of all, his caption is Han, first shot. Which, like, is such a callback to, obviously, Han shot first, which is the biggest thing in fandom, and it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful. And then the movie is going by the title, I mean, the working title, Red Cup, which is obviously, like, Red Solo Cup. So it's just brilliant on so many levels, and it's a party, and I think it just made me really happy and made me sort of get a little bit more faith in this movie.
Yeah,
it's weird because it's like literally just a picture of a slate, but I like
no,
it.
But it makes you feel good because, like, at the end of the day, it's going to be really hard to figure out what this movie's all about until we get a teaser and get a feel for how all these people are falling into their roles and stuff. But the idea that the essence of, like, the vibe on set is already embodying Han Solo as a character is just really nice to see. It's kind of comforting for fans to know that, like, humor is there, that dry humor and stuff like that. So, well, we have some awesome news. I know Selena's excited about this. The Good Place.
Oh my God.
You guys, The Good Place is officially renewed for season 2. I'm playing catch up still in season 1, but I have been loving the show since it aired. And I think that, like a lot of people, I really thought it had already been renewed too.
I know. That was, like, the biggest shock of this, was that it wasn't a sure thing.
So The Good Place, of course, is a comedy from the mind of Mike Shore, who has brought us Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and The Office in the past. It stars Kristen Bell and a bunch of other awesome people. Ted Danson's in this, too. He's kind of like a side character, though. I feel like his name gets him a lot of hype, but he's not, like, there all the time. It's definitely
Don't you think so? I think he's Michael, right? He's one of the main players, I think.
Do you think so? I feel like I thought he was going to be, like, more in there. I don't know. I feel like,
well,
for me,
Pam. ..
Well, me.
You need to watch the rest of the
season. I know,
season.
I need to catch up. I need to catch up. But as far as, like, I mean, like, you know, from where I'm at right now, it's just really, like, Eleanor and Chidi and everybody's favorite.
Tahani.
Tahani, yeah. So good.
She's my
so
favorite.
Good. Anyway, you guys really want to know more about the news, not about how much we like all these characters. Basically, the show has officially been renewed for season 2. We're going to get 13 new episodes next year, which is very, very exciting. And if you're looking for a good sitcom to watch, we highly recommend The Good Place, even though I haven't gotten to the big twist. But everybody I know that has gotten there is just, like, so invigorated for more, which is really exciting to me because, like, even when I started watching the show, I was kind of nervous about how they were going to keep it going past a certain number of seasons, because it is, like, a really fun premise, but there had to have been something to make it feel like there was more story to tell. And so from everything I've heard, and I've not been spoiled yet, the final episode really does that. So I'm excited to see what happens.
I'm excited to hear what you think of it. You need to, like, watch it.
I know. Well, I mean, like, The 100 comes first.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. But soon.
All right. Yeah. So moving, staying in TV, another really cool, exciting story. Well, I say cool. Some people are really upset about this. I actually think it's really cool. And I can't wait to get into the discussion. So the news kind of broke pretty surprisingly that Peter Capaldi has announced that he is stepping down from Doctor Who. So season 10 will actually be the actor's last. He plays the Doctor. He is the 12th Doctor. He announced this on a radio show, and he said, and this season will be my last. I feel like it's time to move on. Season 10, the interesting thing about this is that season 10 is already also showrunner Stephen Moffat's last. It's the first one. It introduces a new companion named Bill, who is played by Pearl Mackie, who I think everyone is super excited to see. It seems like from the trailers, it seems like the two of them actually have a really good dynamic. So just based on that, I am a little bit sad to see him go, but I will say, and then, I mean, I know we're going to get into this more, but I would just say that I really like Peter Capaldi. I think that as an actor, he's really fascinating. He made some really interesting choices with the Doctor. Unfortunately, I think the combination of pairing him with Clara, who I really didn't like, and making him so angry and so intense, that was what turned me off of the show. Also, I mean, the story was bad. I haven't been against Steve Moffat the whole time. I think he's done some really cool things. I love River Song, and I can say that because Merrima isn't here. But I mean, I loved a lot of the stuff that happened. But this past season, I keep trying to watch it. It keeps dropping me. I feel like with the departure of Capaldi and the departure of Stephen Moffat and Chris Chibnall as the new showrunner, the series has a chance to reinvent itself. Like, this could be new Who, and that excites me. So it's not so much that I don't like Capaldi, it's just that I don't love Capaldi's Doctor the way that I loved the previous ones.
I have admittedly not spent too much time with Peter Capaldi, but I did not like Clara very much. I hear she got better, but I didn't really like her when she was first introduced, and it was just really hard for me to keep on going, partially because of the story, but also because I feel like they could have done more with her as a character. Like, she just wasn't interesting to me.
Yeah.
So it was really easy for me to fall off the bandwagon after kind of, like, I just realized that I wasn't interested anymore. But the great thing about Doctor Who is that anytime the show gets this, like, new breath of life pumped into it, it's really easy to get back into it. So I am excited to, I do kind of want to start, I'll probably watch this season, actually, because I've heard, like, everybody's really excited about the new companion and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to get in when the new companion comes in, or when they just revamp the whole series with the new Doctor. So I'll be interested to make up my mind about Capaldi. But I think that that's the brilliant thing about Doctor Who is, like, it can essentially go on forever, and every actor kind of knows when it's their time to say goodbye. So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so what we're going to do now is just we're going to have a bit of a longer discussion about who me and Pam think should play the Doctor, what kind of qualities we're looking for in the next Doctor, and just our sort of reflections on the past few Doctors, who we've liked and why, and what we would like to see more of in the future. And what we're going to do is we're going to separate that discussion. Like, that's going to be like a bonus piece of the podcast that you can listen to separately, because we're sort of soft launching our Patreon, and this is how we're doing it with Doctor Who. But so if you just want to hear what the listeners have to say, then you can listen to that. And if you do want to hear me and Pam's full discussion, then you can find instructions for that in the show notes for this episode on hyperbole.com and on Twitter at hyperbolehype. We have, actually, I think we just have two comments that our listeners sent in, because we asked for feedback shortly before the episode. And it's actually, interestingly enough, Natalia H. and V. Witch both said Hayley Atwell, who has been a generally much repeated candidate for the Doctor. Natalia says, Hayley Atwell, damn it. And V. Witch says, I vote Hayley Atwell for the Doctor. And yes, if there was just one name to pick, that would be the one that I would pick too.
She's also said that she'd want to be the doctor before she got rid of her Twitter account, which was like the saddest day on the internet because we can't have nice things. Somebody asked if she would ever be the companion. She was like, F that, I want to be the doctor. And I was like, you go, Hayley Atwell. But she crushes whatever she does. So yeah, if they want to cast her, that's fine with me.
I would love Hayley Atwell playing the doctor. That would be my ideal. In a perfect world, that would be the next doctor.
Okay, we have a little bit more television news here before we wrap up the news segment. First up, we've got some news from the Orange is the New Black camp. We have a little bit more information as to season 5, and interestingly, we've learned that the plot of season 5 is set to span over 3 days total, which the showrunners are hoping will allow them to dive deeper into kind of the situations that are going down around Litchfield and also into how the characters are feeling after last season's harrowing season finale. Did you watch last season?
I haven't watched any of it. I am too afraid of that show because I'm afraid of prison.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, well, I watched half the pilot and I got so like panicky I had to turn it off.
Wow. Well, people that are listening will know what I'm talking about. That season finale was so heavy. It was something else. And it sounds like we're going to get a lot of the aftermaths of what happens from this point forward. We left on a huge cliffhanger and on a terribly somber note. So I think most fans are really excited to see what happens next. So yeah, looks like we're going to get some good content from Orange is the New Black season 5 when that picks back up again.
Yeah. And our final story is a Supergirl story. Desperate Housewives alum Terry Hatcher is heading to Supergirl. Desperate Housewives, you ask? What about the fact that she played Lois Lane in Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman? Well, that is a very good question, dear listener. And you are right. This is very exciting, obviously, because, I mean, the Supergirl show is sort of very good at bringing in both people from sort of Superman history, but also people that maybe like Glee stars and stuff. There's a lot of talk about Darren Criss coming in for the musical episode. And this is just going to be really fun because, I mean, Lois and Clark, I don't know if you watched it. I feel like everyone like low-key watched that show.
Yeah, like, I was super young. I told
you know about it.
I was super young when that show was on. I completely forgot Terry Hatcher was on it.
It is funny because I feel like Desperate Housewives kind of wipes everything else away that she's done because she's so known for that show. But I mean, she was Lois, you know, she was with the bob cut and stuff. But it's such a long time ago that show was on. I only like it was always on repeats over here.
Yeah, I remember probably watching it too young, but also enjoying it at the same time.
Yeah, and also because it was like my only connection to Superman was through Lois and Clark, which I didn't watch Lois and Clark, but it was on in the background of my life. So it's like, it's interesting. And also because it wasn't about Superman, it was about Lois and Clark. So, and I really liked it and I think it's fun. And executive producer Andrew Kreisberg had a fun statement about it. He said, no offense to any of the wonderful actresses who have also played the part. Amy Adams. Is it Amy Adams? Am I mixing up?
Amy Adams is Lois right now. Before that, it was Kate Bosworth. Yeah.
But Terry Hatcher is my all-time favorite Lois Lane. To have her come back to the super world in a completely different part is an unbelievable gift to me, Greg Berlanti, and the fans. No one knows who she's going to be playing, although she's going to be a villain, so that's going to be different for her. And obviously the Luther family is already sort of heavily... Katie McGraw is a part of the Luther family now, so whatever.
She's back in her rightful place. I just, you know, I want Katie McGraw to play all the roles, but also she does good with like the potential evil characters. So
she really does. And what another thing that's amazing is that Dean Cain, who obviously played Clark and Lois and Clark, is currently on Supergirl, so this could potentially facilitate a little reunion with them. And most likely, if they can make the scheduling work, they'll make like some cute little exchange between them. Like I have no doubt. And they're sort of very known for it. Like I said earlier, Supergirl is really good at incorporating people from the quote-unquote super world, like Linda Carter, obviously the original Wonder Woman, as the president. So stuff like that is really fun, and this is exciting. I'm still working to catch up on Supergirl. I know you're watching it, so this should be good. And that brings us to the end of the news. So we're going to move on to TV show of the week. And what do you have?
So I should have been watching The 100, but I needed to take a break. And I completely forgot about this until I was browsing through Xfinity On Demand. But BET did a mini series called The New Edition Story. Do you know who New Edition is?
No.
New Edition is a boy band that came up in the late 70s. It was also Bobby Brown's first band. So Bobby Brown, of course, is a famed R&B musician. And so the New Edition story tells the tale of how the band started up and kind of the trials and tribulations they went through until the kind of like, I think it like stops. I haven't finished it yet. It's actually three installments of 90-minute episodes. And I've heard it ends about like around 2008. It goes up to like the late, like the early O's, basically, from what somebody else has told me. But New Edition is really interesting because, you know, these days when you think about boy bands, you think about Boys to Men, New Kids on the Block, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, but New Edition really paved the way for all of those bands to be given a chance at the record contracts they eventually landed. If you've heard the song Candy Girl, or like Google the song Candy Girl, you'll recognize it most likely instantly. And so it's a good example of a New Edition track. But the miniseries is really, really great. Also, if you're a Stranger Things fan, Caleb McLaughlin is in it as well. And of course, he's done Broadway before, so everybody kind of knows that he's a singer. But it's great to see him do acting and also like lend his vocals to something that's on TV as well. But I've been really enjoying it. I don't know if you are familiar, or not like you, but like anybody listening also is familiar with VH1's Jackson 5, The American Dreams biopic. It's The American Dreams biopic. It comes on like once a year, at least. They'll bring it out again around like Michael Jackson's birthday, or sometimes even Black History Month, which we're in the middle of right now. It's a really, really long biopic that kind of tells the rise and fall of the Jackson 5. Very similar to that in the sense that it's just a nice long form music biopic. So if you're interested in stuff like that, I highly recommend checking it out. I always forget about like the premium networks, aside from like AMC and stuff like that, that do these scripted dramas or adaptations and things like that. But BET really did a good job with this so far, or is doing a good job with this from what I've seen. I've only seen the first like 2.5 episodes. So it does kind of remind me that they do stuff other than like reality TV and host award shows, which is always nice because like sometimes you forget about these other networks that don't get a lot of hype. But after experiencing part of the New Edition story, I'm interested to see what else they have as far as programming goes. So little shout out to them.
Okay, so moving on to something a little different. I promised last week that I would finish watching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and I did. Surprise! So I am gonna talk about it now. It was very disappointing because I watched episode 12 and I presumed there were going to be more episodes and there weren't. And I was like, no, because it was just getting so interesting. Are you up to date on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
The first season. Did you?
Okay.
Yeah.
I watched both.
Oh, you watched both.
Yeah. It's like the best show to watch.
It's really good.
I always need, like right now, especially like I am drawn to comedy. You know, like, I mean, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is super messed up, but like in an interesting way, in a fun way. So I need shows to watch when I'm like cooking dinner or doing something boring on the computer. Like, you know, like I'm terrible. I have to have two things going on at once or lose focus. So Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is like the perfect show for that. And I've just really fallen in love with it. I think that the lead character, Rebecca, is the worst. Like, she is awful, an awful human being. But that's kind of the point of the show, you know? And I feel like it does a really good job of framing, like, it's kind of the inciting incident of every story is Rebecca, like, behaving selfishly and doing something. And The music is just fantastic, and I'm Valencia, who is the like set up as the bad girlfriend originally. Like she was my favorite from the start, but like as the season goes on and into season two, she changes a lot and grows a lot, and I've really, really enjoyed watching her story. I love Heather as well, you know, the roommate that always goes, "I'm a student," and I love that. And you watch Greek, right?
Yeah, I actually restarted watching season one the other day when I should have been watching The Hundred.
I mean, Greek is the perfect show to escape
It's
at the
really
moment. Like that is
good.
such a feel good show. But so anyway, we actually lose one of the main characters in season two. Like I didn't realize, I was so upset because I really like this character. But they do bring in Scott Michael Foster from Glee, no, from Glee from Greek. And I love him. You know, he's Cappy is my favorite, and he comes back. He comes into Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and he's like so attractive and so interesting, and
Yeah, I
that
heard
makes me
he
really happy.
he was in that in season two, which I haven't seen yet. But yeah, I totally agree. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is a great show. I love speaking of Valencia, I love that it's like halfway through season one, I think, where she goes to the yoga class with her and there's like that whole yoga musical sequence.
And yoga,
Yeah.
yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Yes. That's so good. And everything like the Darrow and White Josh storyline is adorable. Like I love that. I think it's so well done. And Josh, the main guy, Josh, like I find him really hard to swallow as well as a character, but I think that's also kind of the point. Like both him and Rebecca are like kind of, let's just say they both need a lot of personal growth, and the show kind of keeps pushing them together, and it just makes both of them really bad. But again, it's kind of the point. Like you can't really criticize it in like, oh, it's doing a terrible thing, because like that's the show. And he's like, you know, like how he's so childish, and he like jumps from woman to woman and can never be satisfied and stuff. So I'm trying not to sing Hamilton right now. It's like that was the sentence. But you know, and I love that, and I love seeing how dysfunctional everyone is, and I love seeing how it sort of deals with really important issues in interesting ways. And I think it's like an example of a TV show that isn't so concerned with, like, it doesn't take itself so seriously, and I like that. I like that it's just trying to tell a story. And I will say that the absolute best moment of the show, when I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard, was during the trial for the water towards the end of the season, when they have that line about, and BJ Novak like does something with meth, and like that had me laughing, and then BJ Novak actually pops up on the screen, and I just lost it. Like I don't know why that was so funny, but it just was. It's like one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So kudos to them for that, and just for this all the songs in general and everything. Like it what a show. I'm loving it. I'm so glad I finally watched it. So that was it. And then I also just wanted to say, I know that this is pointless because I can't say anything, but The 100 obviously came back for season four. It had its season premiere last night, and I was up practically until the episode aired writing my recap, because it was a lot, because obviously I had the screeners for it, and the excitement of the fandom was just so palpable. Like I have to admit, when I watched the episode twice. The first time I watched it, there was some things about it, I was like really unsure how it was going to be received. And then I watched it the second time, and I was like, okay, so this is actually, like, I actually think this is good. But when you're watching something in a vacuum, like you have no idea. Like everything you think is good could actually, like, with one little shift, especially for this fandom, because it's such an intense fandom, what if everyone hated it? And I was like, I wrote this recap saying how good it is. What if it's bad, and I just haven't realized, because my opinion doesn't always align with the popular opinion. So, but it turned out everyone loved it. Its ratings were bad. Its ratings were very low, and that's very sad. And obviously, we know there are people out there campaigning to have it canceled, and there's a lot going on. I mean, still, I'm not too pessimistic about a season five, because it seems like it's. There's so much social media buzz, which we know the CW cares a lot about. Like, the ratings have been down for all of the CW shows. And it is because CW plays into binge-watching culture. Its programming is directly targeted at people who don't watch live TV. So it's to be expected. And obviously we could have hoped for better ratings, but we'll have to see what happens. I'm enjoying it a lot, and I know the fans that I interact with on Twitter are enjoying it a lot too, and that's all that matters, I think. So yeah, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. So you just watched episode 6 of The 100.
Yes. Season 3. I'm on episode 6 of season 3.
Uh-huh. So you have a good chunk of season. I am so excited to get you guys' thoughts on the season.
It's really intense so far. It's really, really intense. And season 2 is intense for me. So I sometimes don't know why I think that things can't possibly get crazier. I'm shocked when they do. I shouldn't think that way anymore. But it's raised the bar for sure. And I'm sure that season 4 does the same thing from what you've seen.
But yeah, no, I mean, definitely The 100 is in a lot of ways an exercise into seeing how far they can go, you know, and how far they can push morality issues and how far they can push their characters into the gray area and how people react to that. So and that is season 3 for sure, in a lot of ways, and but I will say, like, sort of a little teaser for a special, that I hadn't watched season 3 since watching it live, and I remember feeling like it was very disjointed. It was too much. I felt like plots moved way too fast. Then the second time I watched it, when I was binging it for our special, I enjoyed it so much more. You know, I feel like, also because I knew what was coming, and because I was able to keep watching. Like, I didn't have to put it aside every week and wait. And I felt like the story was a lot more cohesive than it felt watching it week to week. I think The 100, like, is a show that benefits so much from binge watching. And I changed my opinion a lot about season 3. Like, not maybe, you know, individual things, we'll get into that, but just as overall, in terms of story cohesiveness, I think it improves a lot in second watch. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there as a little pre-discussion of The 100 season 3. So let us move on to listener feedback. We have a bunch of comments from Hypeable tweets and emails. So let's start with the comments. Do you want to get Ashley's?
Sure. Ashley says, I feel I'm probably one of the only people who feel this way, but I'm trying to figure out why all the Johnny hate for his performance in Fantastic Beasts. I mean, I only saw the movie once, but he was in, what, like maybe 5 minutes of the movie and said like 2 lines. Can you seriously judge someone on that? I know he's a big name and not what people pictured for the role, but come on, so much hate. I'm pretty sure I have said that we need to wait, but I wasn't here last week.
Yeah. You are definitely the moderate opinion on that.
So I don't worry, Ashley, you're not alone. I think that most of the concern, and again, we gripe because we care, comes from what he has delivered over the past 5 years as far as performances. But there's a possibility that he's not going to take it too extreme for this.
Yeah, and then that's the thing, is that one of the reasons that we sort of go back to it is obviously because we get questions about it and we want to answer it. But I feel like, honestly, I've given my reasons for this already. I think, like Pam said, based on his previous performances, I didn't like seeing this role that could have been really iconic taken over by an actor who's going to make that role his. Like, it's not going to be Grindelwald, it's going to be Johnny Depp's Grindelwald. I don't like that. And I wouldn't have liked it if it had been George Clooney or Brad Pitt either. So that's not specific to Johnny Depp, it's specific to his name preceding him in that way. And then I think the few bits we did get, the way he looked too, which is just kind of speaks to not Johnny Depp specifically, but the way that the movie makers have envisioned that character. He looked like a Willy Wonka. He didn't look like this charismatic, like, this guy doesn't have Horcruxes. This guy isn't half snake. There's no reason for him to look the way he does. This is not the character that Joe teased that he would be. This is not it wasn't supposed to be a Voldemort. It was supposed to be someone very, very, very different. This feels like another Voldemort to me, and that hugely disappointed me. And again, it doesn't have to do with Johnny Depp, but it has to do with how they made him up to be in the movie. And it's my disappointment basically stems from that I had hoped for a different Grindelwald, and we're not going to get the Grindelwald. And not that it was a specific Grindelwald, but I just wanted someone that I would legitimately fear and be enticed by. I wanted someone like Colin Farrell, the way he played it. Because Colin Farrell, too, is a big name. He's not as big, but he's certainly a big name. But the gravitas that he brought to the role feels like what Johnny Depp could have done with the role 20 years ago. And I would have liked that.
Yeah, I think it also comes down to this idea that it doesn't matter if Johnny Depp was cast, but you just don't, you want him to play the role as they perceived it before he was cast, not them to change the role because now it's Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And filmmakers have a tendency to do that, I feel, with more iconic actors. So I totally get, like, that is a valid concern, I think.
And I think, and that sort of brings home again, like, it's, I'm very, I mean, Ashley, if you are excited about Johnny Depp and Fantastic Beasts, I think that's great. I know a lot of people are, and it's going to make your experience as we wait for the second movie a lot better. But it's also okay to be disappointed. I mean, it's just as, like, some people really loved Rogue One, and I really didn't, and some people didn't like Sandra Cage, and I really love that, you know? Like, it's just sometimes we just have different experiences of it, and I think that's okay. I think we sort of make a point on the show saying we try not to be too overly negative, and I'm sorry if we've come across like that to you on this issue, but we also want to be honest, you know? If there's something we don't like, we don't want to sugarcoat that, because we do want to share our actual opinions on things.
Yeah, just
even when they're negative.
Yeah, just remember also, and I'm guilty of this too, like, sometimes the negative voices, like, they ring in your head louder than the ones, like, I tend to be, like, we say this all the time, but, like, in general, the trend is that Merrima's, like, fairly negative, Selena's, like, either yes or no, and then I tend to be, like, somewhere in the middle usually, or I can find the silver lining. So, and it's not just like this comment, but I have noticed that there have been times when people write in and say, you three hated this. And I'm like, actually, I said that I thought it was fine. So so just remember, usually I've got your back if you're moderate. Yeah. So
definitely. And then we did have another comment from Anthony who said, quoted Merrima saying, no one would get the audiobook version of this is if Eddie Redmayne wasn't narrating. And he said, the blind maybe. And I mean, yes. That's true. But I mean, I think
this is the funniest comment. But it's a good point. That's true.
You know what? It's true. You know what it reminded me of? And that's kind of why I wanted to include it, because I wanted to tell the story. When I was a little girl and I was reading Harry Potter for the first time, I got the first three were out by the time I started reading them, and then I was going to get the fourth one, and that was the first one that I was going to get, to when it came out. I was so excited. My mother had ordered it for me on Amazon. It was, like, one of the first things. Something else happened with Amazon for the fifth one. We've been really unlucky. This was the olden days when Amazon, like, didn't have its shit together. So my mother ordered Goblet of Fire for me, and it came in the mail. I was so excited. And then it turned out to be the Braille version of the book. And I was like, because I don't read, like, I can't read Braille. So I couldn't read the book. And I was like, fortunately, I cried. And then there was a school for the blind right next to my school. So I obviously went and gave them the book, because, like, why wouldn't I? But then, you know, it just made me really sad. Oh, so yeah. So that's the story of how I almost taught myself how to read Braille. And maybe I should have, because that probably would have been useful. But yeah, that was it.
That's amazing.
I just thought I would share that story.
I appreciate that.
And then moving on to Twitter comments. Do you want to get the first one?
Sure. Ashley Barnes shared a video with us. She says, have you guys seen this video? It's totally what you would say if you were reviewing the TV show, lol. And the video is why Trump's presidency would make a fantastic TV series by the YouTube channel Cracked. I have not watched this yet, but I will be curious to see if this holds true. Although I feel like I would be horrified if I watched
I know.
A show like this.
Seeing his face, I'm like, oh, no. But
I would be riveted, but also horrified. And then that would also entail that we would be in an alternate universe where nothing like this is actually happening. So maybe I would just be thrilled that it wasn't the reality that we live in today.
So Shelley says, listening now, and I have to recommend Trevor Noah's book, Born a Crime. It's so interesting, and he does a great job reading it. Also, the variable speed controls on audiobooks and podcasts has changed my life. So this was kind of, last week, me and Merrima were talking about audiobooks, and Merrima said that she didn't want to listen to Lauren Graham's book as an audiobook, even though Lauren Graham narrates it, because she feels like it would go too slow. And I said, that doesn't make any sense, because she just speaks in her normal voice. And then I guess that's Shelley says that you can also just speed it up if it bothers you, but
you can. My best friend, she's turned into an avid audiobook listener, especially for book series that she hasn't felt like reading but has been interested in, like City of Bones is a series that she powered through, and she was telling me this. She's like, you can like get through a 6-hour book in like 4 hours if you up the speed. And I last time I was visiting her, I walked by as she was like, she was getting ready for work, and I just heard like da-da-da-da, and I could only make out the first word every like 5 words or something. And so I was very impressed that she could understand what was going on, but yeah, impressive technology there. We have some tweets here from Laura, who says, it's February 1st. You know what that means. Hype Patreon launches this month. Yes, it does, Laura. We're getting ready. We're excited. You're excited. She says, so excited to support them for creating a lovely show. Another rec, if you have all not watched The Fosters on Freeform, it's one of the most diverse shows and deals with so many issues in a way that is like real life, but not in a heavy-handed way. It just had its season 4B premiere. It's on Netflix. I blame you, ladies. I have watched 9 episodes in a row of the 100, but it is so good. And then she also tweeted us later to say, I just finished reading Lady Night by Tamora Pierce. Did we decide that's how you pronounce her name? Tamora?
Apparently, yeah.
Tamora Pierce. And have never felt so emotionally connected to a story.
Oh, yes. So good. I think someone else, might have been Laura, might have been someone else, said that they would be down for a special on Tamora Pierce. And like, Tamora Pierce. And I would absolutely, absolutely be down for that as well. But yeah, no, I just wanted to say I have watched The Fosters. My mother is really into it, actually, funnily enough. I watched it for a while, but it got a little bit too soapy for me. I feel like a lot of those shows also switched at birth. I started watching that and it kind of lost me because it's I don't know. It's just something about it. It's too sweet. But I think it's a great show, and it's a great some great stories, at least in the first couple of seasons. And Aaron says, fun hype today. Always good to hear from you ladies. Also, thanks Merrima for the Please Like Me reps last week. So good. Moving on to emails, do you want to get the first one?
Sure, this one's from Michaela, who says, hey Hype, I was just listening to the latest episode and got to the point where you're talking about the upcoming adaptation of the Power Rangers, and I paused listening to the episode so I could write in. I am a massive Power Rangers fan going back to my early childhood. As a young adult, I have found myself protective of the Power Rangers source material. I am very invested in this movie. I'm very invested in it not sucking 100%. That being said, I'm really siding with Merrima here. These trailers look awful and I'm so sad about it. Power Rangers is awesome, and the reason I still love it even as I've gotten older is that it is a ridiculous show that knows how absurd it is. It is a fun and campy, and when I heard they were rebooting the original series, I instantly got worried that they would intensify the show in all the wrong ways. Sadly, that seems to be the case because the trailers make it look like another teen superhero movie, like Fantastic Four. Of course, I'll still see it as a diehard fan. I just can't ignore it, but I am definitely anticipating disappointment, Michaela.
Hmm.
Well, I hope it proves you wrong, because that would make me really sad if you walked out sad.
Yeah. Laura Morrow, again, wrote an email in saying, hi, ladies. Sorry in advance to Pam if you read this. Ba-dum! She didn't. So no sorry needed. So I am writing in a reference to your Power Rangers movie talk. I fall more on the positive side, but that is largely due to the coolest movie promotion I have ever seen in reference to this movie at New York City Comic Con 2016. I was sitting in a random hallway out of the Jacob Javits Center waiting for book panels to start. All of student 7 cosplayers walked down the hall in a perfect line dressed up as Power Rangers. They were also handing out these coins with the new logo on it, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I stopped the guy because I'm so nosy, and it was set up by the movie company. Thought I would share. That's awesome. I love that.
Sarah Klein says, have you guys watched Good Girls Revolt on Amazon? It tells the story of the researchers at Newsweek magazine that sue Newsweek for equal treatment. It's really good, and I loved every episode. Unfortunately, a month after it was on, it was canceled by Amazon, but I really recommend it. Also, finally listened to Hamilton last week, and I've already bought the soundtrack. That's rude, Jasper. I'm trying to read Sarah's email.
Excuse me. Trying to give some music to the background of your track.
Anyway, Sarah continues, it's amazing. I can't believe I didn't listen to it sooner. I can listen to music at work and listen to it during my whole 8-hour shift. I can't get enough, and I've already listened to your Hamilton special.
Awesome. Rebecca Soul says, hi, Hype Girls. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I love, love, love this podcast. Aww. I have a very long and lonely commute, so I love tuning in to each episode so I can chat with the Hype Girls. You make the hours in my car so much more enjoyable. I love that you have all that you all have your own opinions and that you stay true to your feelings. On that note, I do have to say that I finally saw La La Land and I was pretty disappointed. As a dancer and choreographer myself, I felt like the choreography was underwhelming and fell flat most of the time. The whole movie, I kept thinking what a missed opportunity it was. The story was centered around jazz, and tap dancers love jazz music. There was so much that could have been done there. I kept waiting for the big grand dance number that never happened. I appreciate what the film was trying to do, and I will always love Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling despite this one, but I can't say I will be seeing this movie a second time. I also wanted to say that I have really enjoyed the Gilmore Girls specials. I binge-listened, is that even a thing? Most of the season specials back-to-back in preparation for the revival, and I'm so glad I did. I loved all the insight you girls had and found my thoughts and feelings evolving as I listened to what you had to say about each season. Still a little bit in denial about how the revival ended, but overall it was a great experience and I will always consider myself an honorary Gilmore Girl. I finally wanted to say thank you / I love you for being fellow Bridget Jones fans. My IRL friends can't stand the Bridget Jones movie, so I'm glad I can count on the Hype Girls for all the BJ insight and gossip. Such a great podcast. Thank you for all you do. Love from Atlanta, Rebecca. This was such a lovely email.
It was the best.
I'm so happy. Like, it's so sweet. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for saying that. And yay for Bridget Jones. That can never get enough love in my book. It's my go-to.
It just makes you feel so good. It's like that. Anything like Nancy Myers does, like all that stuff. Mm. It's good.
So it's funny, like you said, that it reminded me of something because I finished the Lauren Graham Talking As Fast As I Can audiobook, and it basically ends by, I don't want to say criticize the ending, but it's like, because she's talking about what an amazing time she had on like the revival and how amazing it was to get back together and how nostalgic and emotional she was. But she kept coming back to that line going like, but it doesn't feel final. Like, it doesn't feel like the end. Like, does anyone else feel like it doesn't feel like the end?
And you're over here like, stop it, Laura. And you're giving us false hope. Yeah.
But I think, you know, and I think first of all, obviously she's sort of teasing, oh, maybe it's not the end. But I think she also, like, because it's her voice with the audiobook, so you can kind of hear her inflection. And it sounds like she's genuinely perplexed that this is how they chose to end the show. Because she's like, it just doesn't feel like an ending. Like, it doesn't, there's so much, like, left. What's happening now? You know, and she basically said the exact same thing that we said on our special, that, like, it feels like the beginning of something. It doesn't feel like the end of something, which I thought was interesting. So that was cool. Is the special out yet? Whatever happened to it?
I don't know. We have to ask Marima. It should be out, like, today, right? Or tomorrow? Or this weekend?
I guess. Oh, yeah. I guess so. I guess when you read when you read this episode, when you listen to this episode, then the final Gilmore Girls special should be out. So you can go find that on our Twitter @HypeableHype or on Hypeable.com. And don't forget that you can all our listeners can and should subscribe to us on iTunes. It's the best place to find all the latest episodes and get them all in one place. And you can always delete the ones that you don't want to listen to if there's any specials or anything like that that you're not interested in. It's a great way to make sure you don't miss any episodes, and especially as we move on and expand with our Patreon. Obviously, there will be more information about all the bonus content, but this, like, this show is not going anywhere, and it's not going to be behind any paywalls or anything. So so definitely subscribe on iTunes, and you'll get all of the normal shows, as always, for free, really easily through that. So I would highly recommend that to everyone. And I think that pretty much wraps it up. We do have some more information, because obviously, as it was kind of teased, we are launching the Patreon this month, and we're sort of scrambling to get it all back together. We're going to be doing a little bit of a rebranding for the podcast, which is going to be exciting, although I don't like change, and I struggle with that, but change is good, guys. That's what we have to keep reminding ourselves. So we'll let you guys know through all our social media outlets. If you, meanwhile, have any comments or questions for us, you can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype, on Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com, and on Hypeable, which is hypeable.com. That's the end of the episode. Have a great week, everyone. My name is Selena.
And my name is Cameron.